Views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers.
You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Feeling bogged down by your daily grind? Not living up to your greatest potential? Then it's time to turn up the heat and get real with what truly matters, be it family, career, wellness, spirituality, or anything else that fuels your inner flame. Join Fire It Up with CJ as this respected life coach talks to a wide range of experts and everyday people for their inspiring and unconventional ideas to help you make the most from your life. Equal parts heartwarmer, cheerleader, and butt kicker, CJ Liu draws on her extensive experience in business and life coaching, along with her intuition and playful humor, to address meaningful topics with truth and irreverence. It takes just one spark to ignite a fire. Now, here's your host, CJ.
Hello, everybody. This is CJ Liu, and we are talking about food. In fact, are there certain food textures or temperatures or smells that just make you gag, that make you or your child gag, or in fact, maybe both of you are gagging at the same time at the sight of asparagus or broccoli or Brussels sprouts, just like our picky eater today, Stephanie Lechanovic. Oh, my gosh. Stephanie, how do I say your name?
It's people usually make it harder than it really is. It's Lucianovic, exactly how it looks.
Oh, that would have been easy. Lucianovic. She is a reformed picky eater, now food writer, and author of Suffering Succotash, a picky eater's quest to understand why we hate the foods that we hate. Welcome.
Thank you.
So I love this book, and part of why I wanted to have this segment is so that we can be, as parents, as grandparents, as observers of picky eaters, we can be less judgmental, more aware and compassionate for what poor picky eaters go through. I actually have one in my house, so I'm really happy to hear about picky eating. So welcome, Stephanie.
Thank you. How old is your picky eater?
My picky eater is 49. No, my... And it's me.
Okay, all right. So you're married.
No. My picky eater is my youngest son, who's 11 years old, who I think is growing out of it. I don't know.
Could be true. They found that males grow out of it when they start to hit puberty because they're just so hungry all the time that everything is appealing. It fills their stomach.
So if I starve my children, they will get out of the work out of their way of picky eating.
Fun theory, yeah.
Okay, so one thing I found so interesting in your book was that, you know, you had your own personal definition of picky eating, and then you went and talked to different people. They called it different things. How did your definition, personal definition, and understanding of picky eating change throughout your research that you did?
Well, I definitely, when I started the book, thought that I was such an incredibly picky eater that no one would have heard my story before. And it turns out that there are people, adults, because my book was mainly about living with picky eating as adults, that are way more picky than I am in terms of entire food groups they wouldn't touch, multiple food groups they wouldn't touch, living on maybe three or four items. So I found that as picky eaters go, I wasn't as bad off as other people were, but having been through it, I still understand, obviously, all the social ramifications, the being ashamed, the feeling like you're isolated, you need to just grow out of it, all of that.
Wait, so can you reverse a little bit? When you said the food groups, I mean, are we looking at the pyramid and saying they don't eat meat or they don't eat cheese? Or what's a food group and based on your definition?
Yeah.
Okay, so there's...
Yeah, so the psychiatrist, the scientist I spoke to said that picky eaters, there would be some who would just cut out an entire food group so they didn't eat meat. Or, I mean, more likely it was they didn't eat meat or they didn't eat any vegetables. Now, I'm not saying they didn't eat any fruits, but it was definitely like they didn't eat any vegetables and maybe only a few fruits. And I think there are probably some out there who don't eat any fruits or vegetables.
And are these people still alive? They're okay.
Yeah, they are. I don't know if I would say they're okay in terms of their health and certainly not in terms of their, I guess, their social health. When I spoke to a psychiatrist at Duke, they defined to me that picky know you're a picky eater when it impacts your health or your social well-being. And as a child and as an adult, because I had fears surrounding eating at somebody else's house, as an adult, I had anxiety about going out to restaurants where I wasn't fully sure if there'd be something I wanted on the menu. They do classify that as, you know, you suffered, you were a picky eater. But you can imagine then, if I was a moderate picky eater, how much worse it was, or how much worse it is for other people.
Mm. What did they say in, when you talked to the folks at Duke? So is the social well-being just feeling like you're normal amidst other people when you're having food at their house and restaurant, or is it more than, what are the other social ramifications and what are the health ramifications that you found out?
Well, clearly the health ramifications, you can't live on just potatoes and pasta. You really obviously need, you need protein, you need all the good things that you get from fruits and vegetables. You know, the health ramifications could range from, you know, obesity to being malnourished. If you think of just what individual fruits and vegetables like an orange might do for you, if you're not eating it or eating any vitamin C, the impact that can have on your skin, your hair, your, you know, your whatever needs the vitamin C. Socially, if you are scared to eat at somebody else's house, you're not going to necessarily go out very much. You're going to avoid social interactions that involve food, which is really hard to avoid. So many of our social interactions are surrounded by food or based around food. So you become reclusive and you become anxiety-ridden and you worry about being judged. And it's a very miserable way to live, and it can impact your love life. If you don't want to reveal yourself as a picky eater to somebody you're dating, or if someone doesn't want to date you because you're a picky eater, that obviously is going to have a huge impact on that too.
Wow, that's actually really sad. I am gaining more compassion, because that would be really hard. I had no idea how hard
very
it
hard.
May be if you were, yeah, yeah.
Because it's very hard because of the judgment that's out there, like this idea that somehow picky eaters have control over this. They don't. It's not a choice. No one would choose to live that way. They really wouldn't. If they could eat all the foods in the world, believe me, picky eaters would, but most of them don't believe that they can. They feel it's a physical impossibility.
When you did, and it seemed like you had done virtually, I love how exhaustive your research was from, in your book, Suffering Succotash, A Picky Eater's Quest to Understand Why We Hate the Foods We Hate. You had went to labs, you licked strips of paper, you dyed and counted your tongue, taste buds on your tongue, you talked to all these different experts. I mean, if you were to kind of summarize for people what your main takeaways or what causes picky eating, because I know during the book you talk about some of these tests as being inconclusive, at least for your own personal quest of understanding. But what would you tell folks, or what would you say are kind of your conclusions on what are the main causes?
My conclusion that I have no idea what caused my picky eating. The genetic tests and the counting the tongue bumps and the licking the paper strips, that was all to determine whether or not I was a quote-unquote super taster, and if I could blame so much of my texture issues or flavor issues on being a super taster. So there was a genetic basis for that. But, you know, spoiler alert, I'm not a super taster, so I had to find other reasons why I was the way I was. And there's a whole host of reasons. I mean, there's biological, there's neurological, there's genetic, and there's psychological. In one particular chapter, I talk about that it's possible that my mother, not really loving to cook, she calls herself an indifferent cook, and she just sees cooking as a chore, much like cleaning the toilet for some people. So she didn't necessarily take the time to research or look up the best way to prepare certain vegetables, which, by the way, growing up in the Midwest in the 70s and 80s were mostly going to be frozen. So the foods I did like growing up were kind of weird, like lamb artichokes. Those happened to be foods my mother herself loved and therefore probably knew the best way to prepare them, so they tasted the best. But all the other stuff I did like, it was more like, well, it was food, it was fuel. She just did not see herself as someone who was going to read through a lot of recipes and find the best way of preparing broccoli or something like that. So
go ahead.
that's one potential reason.
So that's the psychological. Would you call that the cycle? You said biological, genetic, psychological, and neurological were kind of like the categories of potential areas why someone's picky eating. So that would be a psychological issue. Is that right?
Sure. Sure. It could be psychological. It's because it's, you know, you have, say, steamed broccoli once, and you've just decided, okay, gross, I hate broccoli. I will always hate broccoli. There's no way you can make me like broccoli. I don't care how you cook it. So, yeah, you set up a block. Actually, I mean, it can be a neurological block as well because your brain has decided, okay, you're totally grossed out by that food. It makes you gag. That means that food is dangerous to you. So we're going to make sure that you stay away from it by making sure you always dislike it. Unless you overcome the neurology, and you can overcome the neurology. But
you did. I mean, you did do some things in your book where you've actually taught yourself. Not only did you actually become a cook yourself and went to food school, but you trained yourself to actually be okay. I mean, how did you overcome it?
It was a very slow, patient process, and you have to have the proper impetus to do it. And in my case, at 27, the proper impetus was that my then boyfriend, now husband, eats everything, and I was incredibly embarrassed and ashamed at how little I ate compared to him and how sort of provincial I was when it came to what I knew about food or my exposure to food. So that was the impetus. You know, I didn't want him to know how picky I was. Mm-hmm. And then to get past certain issues, the neurological, there was an article written in the New York Times by Harold McGee a couple years ago about explaining why everyone hates, or so many people hate, cilantro. Mm-hmm. And it is this idea that your brain, when encountering a new food, searches in the database to see if there's anything, that if they've had it before. So it can give context to the body, like, okay, you like this. If it can't find it, if cilantro, for instance, is the first time you're ever trying it, if it can't find it, it'll find something chemically similar. And for cilantro, that can often mean soap or ground dirtiness or something like that. But then it's going to go, okay, you're going to be revolved by this because I think this is poison. You're going to hate it, and I'm going to make sure you're hyper aware of it every time you taste it in any food. Like, it'll stand out because we need you to be wary of this, you know, poisonous thing.
Right. And, you know, we actually have to go on break, but can you hold that thought? Because I want to hear the rest about how you get to love cilantro. Sure. So next up, our guest and author of Suffering Succotash, and we're going to talk more about food and when we get back, we'll talk about how you get over your dislike and hate of that sweet cilantro, as well as how to raise a kid who develops joy of eating. Make sure to listen to all the Fired Up with CJ radio shows on parenting. You can go to www.firedupwithcj.com and get those. We'll be right back.
Bogged down by your daily grind? Not living up to your greatest potential? Then it's time to turn up the heat and get real with what truly matters, be it family, career, wellness, spirituality, or anything else that fuels your inner flame. Join Fire It Up with CJ as this respected life coach talks to a wide range of experts and everyday people for their inspiring and unconventional ideas to help you make the most from your life. Equal parts heartwarmer, cheerleader, and butt kicker, CJ Liu draws on her extensive experience in business and life coaching, along with her intuition and playful humor, to address meaningful topics with truth and irreverence. It takes just one spark to ignite a fire. For dates and showtimes, visit www.fireitupwithcj.com or www.transformationtalkradio.com.
Holistic Medical Center is where you find it all. A healthy space with doctors who care, see, and listen to the whole you. Hi, this is Dr. Darvish. If you have not found an answer to your chronic symptoms, you will find answers here at Holistic Medical Center. Our doctors find the root cause of your symptoms and guide your body towards healing naturally. We transform lives from within. Visit us at drdarvish.com, drdarvish.com.
Tune in each Monday at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern Time on TransformationTalkRadio.com to the Elizabeth Anglin Show, your psychic connection to your soul's path. Elizabeth takes you to the Universal Etheric Space Library, where soul records and life lesson plans are stored. This live call-in show will help you decide what your life plan is through the help of your guides and guardian angels. Visit ElizabethAnglin.com or call 1-888-640-4893 to schedule your reading with psychic medium, animal communicator, Elizabeth Anglin.
Ladies, are you living an inspired life? Do you yearn for a more passionate, dream-filled life? Here's Linda Joy, founder of Aspire Magazine, and she has a gift for you.
Aspire has launched its Mission to Inspire initiative with a commitment to give away 100,000 one-year digital subscriptions to women around the globe. Every subscription comes with a multitude of free gifts from our team inspiration partners.
To claim it all, go to AspireMag.net today. No purchase necessary, and live an inspired life.
Tune in to Dialogue Radio with Dr. Jeff on TransformationTalkRadio.com as the stories of the universe are revealed in this engaging and creative hit show. Mondays at 1 Pacific Time, 4 Eastern, Dr. Jeff fills the airwaves with Dialogue Radio, an epic conversation on self, society, and sustainability. Provocative, educational, transformative, and mythic, Dialogue Radio is the place where story seeds the imagination, heals the heart, and inspires personal, social, and planetary evolution.
Welcome back. I'm CJ Liu, and I'm talking to parents out there. Are you running around at mealtimes cooking an individual meal for each of your kids? Embarrassingly, I do that at times, and I get reprimanded by my parent-in-laws. Or do you make your kids do things like clear the plate or force them to take a certain number of bites of a certain food before they leave the table? Well, these are all things that well-intentioned parents do because they're afraid that their children will starve or they worry about their eating. And today, Stephanie Lucianovic, a reformed picky eater and author of Suffering Succotash, is going to share her research from her book on not only the do's and don'ts for parents who want to develop a healthy relationship with food with their children in a way that honors both their children's emotional and physical health. But we're also going to start off the segment by wrapping up the question I asked at the end of segment one, which is how do you overcome aversions to certain foods? So welcome back, Stephanie.
Thank you.
So in the previous segment, you were saying cilantro, you may actually have a negative reaction to it, and your body says, your brain codes it and says, this is dangerous.
Right.
Anything that tastes soapy like this, you know, I've tasted soap, dangerous, don't eat. Cilantro tastes like soap, dangerous, don't eat. Okay, so
right. That's
where we left off. So now, how does one overcome that?
Well, so we can apply this to other foods that maybe your body has decided, maybe because it made you gag when you were a baby the first time you had it, maybe you threw it up because of some unrelated issue, you know, hungover, whatever. So a way to get past that is to retrain those pathways that are putting up warning signs. And the way to do that is to continue to have, and you have to want to do this, to continue to have that food in ways that will make you change your mind. So you combine it with other flavors that you like. You make sure you're eating it in a good mood or when you're surrounded by friends and family. So you're having the psychological impact of, this is a happy time, this is a good time, I'm enjoying this.
Mm-hmm.
The doctor interviewed by Harold McGee, the neurologist, he was a cilantro hater initially, but, I mean, he had a reaction that he didn't like it, but he continued to eat it and therefore retrained those neural pathways. I did this whenever I attempted to eat a new food that I thought I didn't like. I would doctor it up. I would add other flavors, not dumping it in cheese sauce or anything like that, because I still wanted to be able to taste the food, say, sautéed greens.
Mm-hmm.
But I would make sure to combine it with other flavors I liked, like garlic, sautéed garlic, and often grated Parmesan cheese. And then if it was a texture problem, it's the same thing. You want to change your perception of the texture. So I don't like big piles of greens, so I would chop it up into small pieces, saute it, and I would mix it with cooked farro or cooked pasta, because then you're not just having a mouthful of those greens, you're still eating the greens, and you're actually probably enjoying them because you're enjoying other aspects of what's in your mouth. Mm-hmm. And to this day, that is how I prefer to eat sautéed beet greens or chard or whatever, is to have it combined with pasta or with farro or, you know, mixed in with something else.
Now, can you eat it straight? Now, I mean, I know that you've trained yourself to enjoy it in this, you know, mixed with other things, with grains, but can you eat it straight, or is it still not palatable to you to eat it straight?
I could. I probably could. I can. I've gotten to the point with certain foods that even if I don't like them and don't really want to ever eat them, like bananas and raisins, if I'm faced with them, I can get through it. Uh-huh. With greens, there's a little bit more of my gag reflex might get triggered. It's just because it spends so much time in your mouth as you're chewing through it because they're kind of dense and they're extremely full flavored. Mm-hmm. So the thing is, if I let myself think about it too hard, I'll probably gag a little bit, but I can get through it. I mean, I can get through a meal.
Let's stop talking about it. It's probably not making you feel comfortable even talking about it.
It's okay. I'm used to it now.
Okay. All right. So let's say that you have a picky eater as a child, which I do. And we were talking in the beginning about things that parents do. And you have a chapter on this in your book about things that you should do and should not do. Do you have any, you know, what are your thoughts about that? And you have a child yourself, right? How old
is
your child?
I have a 3-year-old.
Okay.
So he's prime for being a picky eater at this stage.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, one thing parents need to realize is that between the age of, say, 3 and 6, I mean, that's a very sketchy outline because I know it can start as young as 15 months and go to 7 or 8. Mm-hmm. That is just developmentally normal for them to be in a picky stage. It's just, it's part of their development. It's completely normal. Mm-hmm. That's the one thing you have to realize. Number two, if you have a picky eater and you need to think about what you think really means picky, is it because they don't like certain foods or is it because they only like one food? If your pediatrician is okay with their health and development, then you as a parent need to relax and also be okay with it. The more amped up and freaked out you get as a parent, the more amped up and freaked out the kid's going to be because they totally read into it. As young as 15 months, my son was picking up on the fact that I was very anxious about his feeding times because it was always about how much more could we get into him because he was born on the small side and we had always sort of had to be worried or we felt we had to be worried about his growth. Even when he hit 7 pounds and our doctor was like, he's fine, relax, it's okay. We were still, if he started to show some signs of not eating what we thought was quote-unquote enough, we got freaked out about it, and he was totally reacting to it by also, I guess, probably being freaked out and not really wanting to eat. I mean, kids will read into that tension at the dinner table. You got to keep the dinner table tension-free as possible. Put stuff in front of them. Make sure there's always at least one thing on the plate that you know they like. If they don't eat the other stuff, fine. Don't even comment on it. Just fine. Take it away. You offer it again. Henry was offered my roasted broccoli, which is the broccoli. It's now the only way I like to eat broccoli, and it's the recipes in the book. I offered it to him probably, maybe a dozen times before he finally decided to take a bite of it. And now, not only does he clean his plate when I serve it to him, but he lists broccoli along with okra as his favorite foods.
Wow.
Which is weird. Yeah, well, I happen to adore okra. It was one of my major conversions as a picky eater to have sautéed okra. And a book event I'm doing locally here in Palo Alto, I will be bringing okra to convince everyone that it's so good. And I think it's just we make it so much, and Mark and I love it so much, that really does influence the child. Like, how much you particularly enjoy food will influence the child. Now, I'm not saying that's always going to work. That's the problem with a lot of pop culture articles on kids and picky eating. They set out these lists of rules and they say, you know, as long as you breastfeed or if you eat a lot when you're pregnant and you introduce new flavors all the time, your kid won't be picky. It's a maybe that your kid won't be picky. You're lucky if they're not picky. You can do all the things, quote unquote, right and still get a picky eater. And what's a real disservice to parents is making them feel like they did everything they could. They still have a picky eater. What's wrong with them? What's wrong with their child? And that is not a good situation to be in.
No, I'm there because I get that. I get that. Like, why does so and so eat these things? I'm like, I don't know. He just doesn't eat them. Well, and then, you know, I started doing the thing that our pediatrician recommended, which is you got to get them acclimated. So, like, only just take one bite or take three bites. But I think the thing that you're talking about is, you know, and like, take three bites, you know, and you're all stressed out. So they're thinking,
right,
like, something scary about to happen when I take these three bites.
Right. Well, and
they don't
also
have a positive association with it.
Some of the feeding experts, Ellen Satter in particular, her book is an amazing resource for parents and eating. She doesn't even advise making them even try it. It's just sort of like, put it there. When they want to try it, they're going to try it, you know? You can't force them to like something. And that's the other thing. We all have different preferences. It's just that picky eaters, for one reason or another, happen to dislike more things than, say, the average person does, I guess. And I don't even know if I'm using the term right when I say average, because we don't know how many picky eaters are out there. For all we know, because we've been in hiding for so long, we could actually be the majority here. We just don't talk about it. So for parents, it is a lot of you need to relax. You need to try and block judgment from other parents. And my note to other parents, and I wrote this in the New York Times, is other parents need to back off. Because if you think you know everything because you don't have picky eaters, again, you just got lucky. You can have families that have a picky eater and a non-picky eater parented by the same parents, and it's like, well, what happened there? It's luck of the draw. It's personality. It's individualized.
So we have time for one more question, and I wanted to ask the short order cook thing, because I know that you had said you were short order cooking, and you got feedback that that probably wasn't the most appropriate thing to do. Do you still do it? What's your takeaway after digesting and writing the book?
Well, the thing is that because I love to cook and because I spend a lot of time in the kitchen making our meals, it's almost kind of easy for me to just, oh, I'll just pull this out because I know he likes it, and I'll throw it on his plate. And that kind of feels like short order cooking to me. Really what it is if you put something in front of your kid and they say, I don't want this, I want X, Y, or Z instead, you have to say, no, this is what you're eating. We can make X, Y, or Z tomorrow. And that's happened to us a lot. I mean, Henry will ask for pasta, or he'll ask for okra, and it's not an okra night. I don't have it in the house. So it's no, he'll have to eat what's in front of you, and if, you know, you want to wait until tomorrow, fine. And you have to be okay with them walking away from the table having eaten very little, because kids do make it up at other points in their day or week or whatever. So you don't want to do the short order cooking because they grow to depend on it. And that's definitely one of these boundaries you have to set up as a parent. You have to have that.
Oh, you're right. Okay. Boundaries. Okay. I'm converted. Seriously. Yeah. I've been on the fence. My husband and I are like, well, I don't know, but I think that's true. Okay.
I think just give them something that at least one thing that you know that they're going to like and eat. And then if that's all they eat, fine. You know, they've eaten something.
Okay, folks, Suffering Succotash, A Picky Eater's Quest to Understand Why We Hate the Foods We Hate. This was such a fun book to read.
Thank you.
So many funny stories about you and your husband. It's fantastic. Go out and get it, Suffering Succotash. Thank you so much, Stephanie, for being here.
Thank you, CJ. Thank you very much.
So next we're going to focus our attention. We're making a switch to the world of business and how we can use our intuitive mojo at work. Folks, join us every week as we explore how to bring awareness and attention into all areas of our life, whether it's parenting like we did today, work, or health. And to get a weekly subscription to the show, go to iTunes, type in Fired Up with CJ, and click subscribe. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back.
Aren't you tired of the same old negative vibe? Hey, Valerie, have you heard about TransformationTalkRadio.com?
No, what's that?
Dr. Pat is launching a new network. And
Dr. Pat?
Dr. Pat.
How many hours is she going to be on?
It won't be all Dr. Pat. She'll be joined by her friends, transformative hosts from around the globe. TransformationTalkRadio.com is a 24/7 network.
24 hours of Dr. Pat and her guests?
No, 24 hours of Dr. Pat and her hosts.
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited. Where's it going to be broadcast?
You're going to be able to hear her in Seattle, Boston, Connecticut, New York, Rhode Island, on over 300 cable radio stations, and on the internet everywhere. Listen live at TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Great, we should spread the word.
Absolutely, spread the word. Go to TransformationTalkRadio.com.